SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius, 162 XM, 207, Sports Zone 999, if you're listening that way, to Sirius XM. And at our website, Steve, kind of had been expecting not such great weather. And boy, is this going to turn into one of those unique special summers after the rainy it seems like it's in that direction. Just absolutely gorgeous again, and getting ready to start Whitney week, and I didn't really yesterday didn't have a tremendous amount of time to look ahead, frankly, to Saturday. But if you haven't yet, yikes. And I'm sure we'll touch on it with Andy. This is always a fun week, and for the long term spa goer, this is it. I mean, this is when it really kicks in, as if we haven't been treated already to enough good racing. But if you haven't looked ahead yet, a quick glance, and like I said, I think Andy will probably touch on some of this when he joins us at 11, but the Whitney ends up drawing a dozen, and yikes. I mean, anybody you could have wanted to be here, and will certainly get in, I imagine. I don't like to do a lot of, pre-race, previewing with trainers. I Bobby Frankel cured me of that. Way back, I remember reaching out to Bobby probably on a Thursday afternoon, and he said, "Nah, I'm not coming on before a race. You call me after." And that resonated. So that's why we gravitated toward post race analysis with the horsemen and the connections in general. But it'll be unavoidable when it comes to Todd Pletcher visiting later in the morning. Pletcher with Charge It coming out of the Hanshin and stretching back out to the mile and an eighth. He's got Bright Future that won the Salvatore Mile as well, that's involved. He's got Croupy. So the Pletcher camp with a quarter of the Whitney field, but there is no shortage here. All the stars came out, and if you don't think that any of these are stars, which okay, I get it. although National Treasure, off the Met win, he certainly counts, I would think. I can pull a Michael Tolkien line from The Player. No stars, just talent. what about the way it played in Canoga Park? the field includes Brittany Russell showing up with Post Time. And I hope Mrs. Charles comes. Hillwood Stable, Ellen Charles, the doyen of Maryland. And Post Time shows up here out of a good second in the Met. It also tried the Westchester and got beat by Messier in there. But Post Time, very respectable. It's 8 for 11 career. If people haven't noticed, as an aside, Disarm for the Winchell Asmussen camp out of the Foster. 4-1 and really never really threatened, never really got involved. National Treasure, as mentioned, Warrior Johnny. That was a nice score early in the meet with Phil Bauer. Why not take this shot? I mean, he's a gelding, but it still, why not? For Mr. Rigney, first mission off the misfire at even money in the Foster. Il Miracolo, who I never get right personally, last seen in the Ali Sheba behind first mission. Kruppi, as mentioned, who has really kind of, you know, took a while, but the son of Curlin, named for Jimmy Kruppi. Rapoli and Viola, Kruppi in here. Tumbarumba shows up. Tumbarumba. How about that? For Wathnan and Brian Lynch. Second in the Hanshin. In fact, he's coming off three straight seconds. I mentioned Bright Future. Javier Skippy Longstocking. Gotta respect. Got to respect. And Savvy Joseph has been unconscious in all the various venues in which he's participated. Arthur's Ride, who after the year break has come back and run, other than the, you know, the misfire in the slop at Churchill in May on Derby. Was that Oaks Day? I think that was Oaks Day. Arthur's Ride, excuse me, in his stake debut of any kind, and Charge It, as mentioned. And in fact, I know I retweeted. I know I retweeted David Aragona yesterday because David provided everybody with the early morning line for the entire card. And here it is right here. So I'll give you an idea because this is always always interesting. Post time is 20-1 with Sheldon. Disarm, 15-1. Rosario, National Treasure, 9-5 favorite, logically, with Flavian Pratt. Warrior Johnny, 20-1 with Gaffleone. Nice. First mission is 9-2. Florent Giroux, Il Miracolo, Manny Franco, 20-1. Kruppi is 15-1 with Irad. Tumbarumba, Luis Saez, 20-1. Bright Future, 5-1. Castellano, Skippy, 8-1. Jose Ortiz, Arthur's Ride, 8-1. David projecting that Arthur's Ride, despite the lack of stakes experience and the somewhat wide draw, 8-1. Junior Alvarado, and Charge It with Johnny, 30-1. 30-1. That's a, hey. I mean, I guess in a 12-horse field, based on the numbers, somebody had to be. But, huh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Third off the fairly lengthy layoff, and we'll talk to Mike Welch. We'll get workout info, et cetera. The Whitney is only the, I mean, the cherry on the sundae. The test, 6-horse group. Nice to see Bright Work back for John Ortiz, making her 3-year-old debut. Probably getting back to what she does best. And don't forget, 2-for-2 at the Old Spa. My Main Squeeze, the New York bred maker, and Bill Butler, and Windstar. Who else? Ways and Means. Obviously, he's got to be respected, and more than respected. Bell's Bluebell. Carlos David, who very quietly is 2-for-8 at the meet. Coming out of the Merrifield win at Monmouth, Denim and Pearls for Brad Cox, 3-for-18 at the meet. And he's also got Emery for Stone Street. Coming off the Victory Ride, Victory, the traditional prep. You got the Lure, love the restricted stakes. And of course, it's also De La Rose week, the two of them, the Troy, the Turf Sprint. It just going to be so much fun. The Saratoga Derby. I didn't even mention the Saratoga Derby. Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore in for the Friday, Saturday weekend opportunities because the Saratoga Oaks is on Friday, and they showed up here with Greenfinch, a Justify filly that, you know, seems a little cut beneath a tiny bit, but did pick up a win at the Killarney in a minor-ish looking stake. So Friday, and then on Saturday, Diego Velasquez, the Frankel colt, coming out of a Group 3 win. Did not particularly fare well in the King Eddie at Ascot. So, or the Prix de Jockey Club at Chantilly, either. So it seems like two cut beneaths, and of course there's nothing more irksome than these cut beneath types coming over and winning. it's a little tough to swallow. Anyway, it should be a terrific week. You got the Glens Falls coming on Thursday, and tomorrow's the De La Rose. I love these restricted. I say this all the time. So anyway, Whitney Week is here, and it's all coming together. You got the round table, you've got Hall of Fame, then the sale and on the horizon. This is, as Tom Durkin used to say, it's the season you wait for all year. Those are the, we ran those ads for, in fact, I think we ran those ads even after Naira stopped running them. Who raise your hand, right? What the opening line? It's now post time and party time. I should get Durkin we should tape that actually, and just every so often, right? And every so often, like a soundboard. It is now post time and party time. We got a it's Horseman Fest. Horseman Fest 24 this morning, because that elusive Ned Allard. Ned apologized. He hadn't looked at his phone all morning. And when he did, it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He said, sure, call now. I said, well, Ned, you and I could have a nice talk, but it defeats the purpose. So Ned Allard is going to join us in just a few minutes. Allard, what did I say yesterday? 2,000 something wins, and here, we're gonna put an official number on it. Got really nice reaction to people really enjoyed hearing from Craig DeLazzi, and in fact, who was it on? Somebody on Todd Morrison on Facebook sent me. He had a clip, not a clip, but a photo that he posted from a race at Santa Anita. And I don't think it was the Santa Anita Oaks. But anyway, he put up a picture of a program that he's got, and it had Ello Love, who you may remember. I mean, you want to talk about a horse the time forgot. Here she is. Gilded Time filly that was really good at 2 and 3. Wasn't a great older filly, but was really good at 3. And I had not seen her name or thought about her in a long time. So I appreciated that Todd said that. I also got some interesting input, and I'll bring it up with Andy. About how I did mentally massage around who would be. Who to have that conversation about, potential rule change to help with the situation in the non-starter / DQ event on Sunday in that fifth that was so wacky. One thing people have talked about a lot is, considering the technology that's available, the opportunity in multi-race and big multis to indicate a scratch alternate so that, should your horse be a late scratch, gate scratch, you know, the bet falls to, you know, you get replaced by a horse of your choosing, as opposed to, you know, what was always, you know, was meant to help the, you know, people are like, I don't want the post time favorite. Well, it's something. It was meant to, you know, it was meant to help and give you something. But, you know, how often it's still a post time favorite and they still lose 68% of the time or 64% of the time, whatever the, you know, whatever the current number might be of winning favorites. So anyway, I think all of us can count on one hand the number of times we got the post time favorite and they actually won. And I don't remember I probably should have saved things like this, save a chart and put it away. But there, I do remember hitting something decent where that did happen, where I was like, oh, I got the post time favorite. The sucker won. Ned Allard kicks us off. Tim Yakteen as well. Yakteen joining us on the heels of not just Johan's win, but the nice maiden winner that he, authored the other day. So we'll talk to Tim. Now we get to celebrate the unbelievably good push and really nice score yesterday that Tony Kahlo, away he went. He delivered Quinn's Promise. That was fabulous. And I know a lot of people seemingly, because I heard from half a dozen at Derby Trail and email and on Twitter, that push, that insight for Dale's second time runner was out of this world. And I'm just pulling the chart. Here it is. 22-1, a 45-66 mutual, Quinn's Promise. And there's more to this, and we're going to actually flesh it out because Dale Romans himself will join us in around the top of hour two, around 10:15. This is a Promises Fulfilled baby that Dale's longtime client and campaigner of Promises, Bob Barron from here in Albany. And I'm sure Bob would have preferred that Quinn's Promise break the maiden right here in front of him and his family and friends at Saratoga, but that's okay. I'm sure he's just equally pleased because this is a homebred of Barron's. And in fact, let me see something about Quinn's Promise, because going into yesterday anyway, and it might have been it probably is right actually, because I only printed the info in the morning. This is the first crop of Promises Fulfilled, and that's his second winner. So he's now, well, this is a second time starter, so it doesn't, he's got six runners so far, this being one of the six, and now has got two wins and 12 starts. So, you know, a fairly typical stallion start to the career. Promises Fulfilled, and I'm anxious to hear. This is out of a Tisnow mare of Barron's, dropped in Kentucky. So we'll get some Promises Fulfilled notations from Dale. See if maybe Dale, you know, he's got some mares. See if he bred a few, and find out more. You know, Bob Barron, really a wonderful owner, and he's got to be excited. Quinn's Promise. And the rest of us were excited at the $45 winner. So great job by Tony. And to be honest, it's not as if we didn't discuss the rest of the trifecta, which paid handsomely. $780 try for 50 cents. Jeweled Destiny was second. That was the McPeak. I know that I mentioned for Walking L Thoroughbreds, and even totally justified the Rusty Arnold that we mentioned about the Bregman program. So this was a bonanza, and I hope a number of you benefited. Then, actually, in the sixth, Dale comes back and wins again for CJ Thoroughbreds and Delia Nash. This is a Delia Nash homebred. More Dale Roman stallions, not this time. And this an April foal, first-time starter. And it looked like, for a while, that Rudy Brissett's horse, True Violence, that we discussed with him yesterday, who went off as second choice, tick under 3-1, looked like a winner. And then Macero came calling with Corey Lannery. So Dale sweeps the two juvenile maiden races yesterday at Ellis. And then the rest of that sequence out of deductions, Chris Block for Team Block. Good for them. And that was a decent mutual too, $18 winner. And then the Loveberry, Jareth Loveberry boots home Pendulum for Godolphin and Brendan Walsh, catching the even money Greg Foley, Donna Meyer product, Big Trouble. So really fun yesterday. The racing at Ellis, these Mondays, these Monday cards are so much fun, so much fun. Really nice addition to the landscape. And Brian, you can reach for Ned. I just heard from him. Reach for Ned Allard. And as we do that, I'll mention that Presque Isle, and this is no knock on Pimo. But in fact, in that sixth race, Hector got caught, was reeled in, with Gallardo, second choice or third choice, actually. And so that, you know, negated the double opportunity, but it didn't necessarily. People were going to use Rose's Alibi, Trombetta, for my racehorse with the Justify Filly, Rose's Alibi. And she was 6-5. Michael Matz, actually it was not Matz, it was Aaron McClellan's horse that was second, that new hire that we mentioned that was moving, that was trying the synthetic from the dirt. All right? That gets us... that gets the recapping from yesterday. Mondays, this is nice. We don't have Saratoga and Del Mar on Mondays anymore. Not for a while now, but this is a pretty good pretty good alternative. Ned Allard is standing by. Ned, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Ned, I'm great, and I'm glad I've been waiting to call you because you know very well what we think of your work and. You're having a super year, and it was punctuated a little bit over the weekend with a DeFrancis Dash win for Dean Delivers. Things are really good. Sunny Breeze also won the concern. Congratulations.
Right. Thank you.
Ned, talk a little bit. I suppose we could dive into these two wins, and you know, there's been some others already this summer and in the spring. But
right.
You got to be delighted to have these kinds of horses when a lot of people might be retiring.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of like George. You know, I came up under George Hamby, and he's 101, and he made it as long as he could, and I still have, you know, I'm 78, but still healthy, and spry and have all the energy and enthusiasm that I had when I was a kid. So, I mean, it's nice to have some good horses in the barn, and it's nice to be able to still have stake horses in the barn, too. So, I mean, it's been a good year, and Marilyn Campbell, who's gone on with the operation in Florida, has sent me some very nice horses this year, and it's been a good run.
And of course, you're talking about Stonehedge, and you know, they've got their breeding program, and you know, to take some of those horses, you know, these Cajun Breeze sons and daughters, and you know, race them outside of Florida, and you know, Florida company. Obviously, you win yourself a, you know, a DeFrancis Dash with Dean Delivers. You make these horses into stake runners.
Well, thank you. I bought Gil's first horse way back over 40 years ago, and I bought him a horse by the name of Ski Resort from Alfred Vanderbilt in a dispersal at Belmont. And then it went from there, and then he bought a piece of Shenaney. And then when Shenaney retired, he was the farm that Gil bought, Waldemar. And I brought him over there, and we were looking at some of Fuller's mares. And 2 years later, he ended up buying the farm. Probably the biggest mistake I made, instead of leaving New England to go to Philadelphia Park, I probably should have gone on to Florida, but you never know how things are going to go. But right now, they're some of them are coming my way, and it's been a lot of fun.
And you know, you mentioned that, and I was going to certainly talk some New England with you too, Ned. You mentioned Peter Fuller. You know, there's a movement afoot to try to reestablish an equine center again in Massachusetts that would be a mixed-use racetrack and equestrian center. You know, this is an ongoing project, but in the meantime, you know, all of the living legends that you know, came out of Rhode Island, New Hampshire, and New England, you know, you guys all kind of scattered to the winds.
Right. Well, I had to leave New England when I did. It was in the early 90s because their program was starting to go downhill, and they didn't have any more stake races, and I had a barn full of stake horses. So I needed to find another venue, and that's why I chose the Mid-Atlantic. I thought I'd have plenty of opportunities, which I did. It's been good, but it might have been better off if I had gone to Florida. Who knows? But anyway, you can't make all your decisions can't be right. That's for sure.
Well, and all anybody has to do is look at the run, you know, and the breadth of your 40 plus years, you know, training horses, and you. It's very clear. I mean, when you look at the number of winners and your earnings, you know, right about that period from about 2000 to 2010, you had arguably, you know, your best years. You had, you know, you had
right.
some, you had a kind of a block, like a 4 year period in the late 80s where you
right.
had big numbers. But what's
right.
amazing that when a lot of guys would be kind of winding down, you know, here you've enjoyed since 2020, you've enjoyed, you know, four or five straight years of terrific percentage success and nice earnings. And, you know, whenever you win, I always laud. I said, you know, here's Ned Allard, who's been doing it forever. And, you know, a horse with talent in your hands is going to make money and make a happy owner.
Well, thank you. I've been very fortunate, and you know, you're only as good as your horses, and I've been very lucky to have guys like Peter Fuller and John Costello and Dr. Torsney and Mrs. Johnson and the Campbells. I mean, it's amazing how many really good owners that I collected over the years, and they make you look a lot smarter than you probably really are.
Well, you know what I thought of Peter, and one of the great. There's any number of legends that it's been a privilege to have on the show over these past 20 years, and talking to Peter was one of those, and Abby's been on as well. And
right.
Of course, all of this, you know, all of this is a reference to the amazing Mom's Command.
Right. Oh, yeah. She was an incredible racehorse. She was an incredible racehorse. And it's funny, she was very disappointing as a broodmare, although her last foal, an Albert the Great, ended up running over $2 million. So, I mean, she wasn't a complete dud, that's for sure. She did produce one very good horse.
Well, and you know, talk about since this came up. I mean, you know, we're in the midst here at Saratoga. I'm sure you're watching, you know, what goes on, you know, not just in the region, but you know, in the game overall. And here's Kenny McPeak with a very talented 3-year-old filly that is going to challenge the boys in the Travers.
Right.
And you know, Mom's Command didn't need to do that, and you know, her. I'm right. She didn't race after three.
Yeah, right. The Alabama was her last race.
Okay.
She wrenched an ankle a little bit. It wasn't a big deal, but you know, Peter had her insured, and the insurance back there. If you wanted to insure a horse with $3 or $5 million, I mean, their earnings wouldn't pay for their insurance. So he had a hell of an offer to sell half of her, and worked out well, although, you know, who knows how good she'd have been as a 4-year-old.
And in fact, I just pulled up since we went in this direction, you know, what surprises me, you know, she was 11 for 16. And I guess this will be a instructive mention for people. She went 11 for 16. She won the Alabama, the Coaching Club American Oaks, the Mother Goose, the Acorn, the Comley, the Cherry Blossom at Garden State, the Flirtation at Pimlico. She won the Salima, the Frisette. Yep. The Salima, which was a grade one at the time.
Right.
The Astorita, actually, at Belmont, which people have forgotten about. Anyway,
right.
She didn't make $1 million. Despite,
I know.
If this was
well,
in
she
today's,
wasn't, you know, if that's the only horse that Peter didn't nominate for the Breeders' Cup because, you know, the Breeders' Cup had just started, and he just hadn't nominated her. So, I mean, we went and we ran the Hollywood Starlet as opposed to the first Breeders' Cup, and the horse that won the first Breeders' Cup, we. She was no contest for us to handle.
Well, and but, you went out to California, and was it outstandingly that?
Yes, outstandingly of Wolfson's.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I mean, she was a terror.
She was.
Unbelievable.
She was a lot of fun. Between Campbell and Fuller alone. And John Costello, I mean, I know I won over 100 stakes for the three of them.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And how did you, when did you first start,
training
for Gil?
I'm going to say that, first there was Fuller, and then Fuller was good friends with John Costello. And then I got some horses for John Costello. And John Costello, being, you know, the owner of the Lowell Sun newspaper, knew Gil Campbell very well. And they brought Gil out one day to Suffolk Downs, and he seemed to be real interested. And then I didn't hear from him for about a month. Then he called, and he said, come on, let's have some fun. And we certainly did. And that was over 40 years ago.
He was originally from Lowell, Gil
Who?
Campbell.
Gil oh,
Campbell,
yeah,
right
he
there.
Was from Lowell. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep, Tingsboro. He
How
lived in Tingsboro, but he was a Lowell guy.
How about that?
And then through Gil, I met Charlie Mattis, and, you know, that was Miss Indiana and Begain and Rockier. And
it's unbelievable.
It's been a fun run.
Well, and you know, frankly, you mentioned Maryland, and it's very gratifying. That going forward. I mean, you think look at what Barbara Banky has done. When Jess Jackson died, there was real concern and speculation about, well, what's going to happen, with Stone Street, and she's expanded.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And it's good for obviously good for the game. And in fact, I'm thinking of somebody else that I don't think to the same extent, but Bill Backer's wife, I'm heartened to see her. I don't know if she's just campaigning the rest of the Someday Farm horses, Smitten,
right.
Not Someday, Smitten Farm. But I see she does well, and I mentioned Someday.
I always felt that, Gil was a little older than Marilyn, but from day one, Marilyn enjoyed the horse industry just as much as Gil did. And that doesn't usually happen. Usually the husband or the wife are the ones that love the game, but you don't usually get the combination as strong as those two were. They were an instant match in the beginning. And I started training for Gil before he got married. And Marilyn stepped in, and she enjoyed the game just as much as he did and was just as involved as he was. So, I mean, it was a win-win situation.
Well, and winning is what you've continued to do. Let's talk about these two performances. And, the DeFrancis Dash right now isn't as heralded as it once was, but
right.
It's still a nice sprint. And
positively.
Right?
Positively. Yep. There were some nice horses in there.
Well, Sibelius.
Dean was sent up to me because he tailed off a little bit in Florida because of the heat, I believe. And he came up to us, and then within about a month, he had completely kind of turned around, put on some weight, looked great, and was training super. And he's been running that way since.
And of course, Bo Yates, who does a terrific job.
Bo Yates did a wonderful job with this horse and made a lot of money with him. And I'm glad that I haven't screwed it up.
Well, he's now won three straight May through July. And, I know fig wise, he doesn't necessarily shoulder up. We're going to talk to Mark Glatton a little bit about his win with Dr. Venkman, and
right.
We're going to hopefully talk to Eric Kruljack too about the Chosen Vron. Yesterday I discussed with Wesley Nakatomi, a 105 buyer, and Rudy Brissett was on with his 3-year-old world record. Is this a horse that he's not necessarily a grade one sprinter? Would you try him at an elite level or no?
Yeah, I think that one thing about it, he's kind of making us think about it. That's for sure.
All right. Well, and then in terms of sprint distance, 5 for 11 with 3 seconds at 6 furlongs, and he just missed when you go back to that 7/8 race. Tampa, and
right.
He has won though at 7.
Yep. Although I think his best distance is 6. But on a given day, 7 may be just fine.
And the right kind of track.
Right, and so forth and so on.
Nice. Well, the bettors gravitated toward him, and went favored, went off at 3-2.
It's interesting because they had in the program, they had Sonny Breeze picked on top, and he ended up paying $12. And with Dean Delivers, I think they had him like third choice at 4-1, and he ended up going off a heavy favorite.
Well, Jamie Rodriguez, basically held Five Dreams safe, that was chasing, in control performance.
Right.
And the Francis Dash, well, nice.
Yeah, Jamie Rodriguez is an outstanding rider, I think. He uses good judgment. He's just a really good rider, and he's fit these horses very well.
Well, you also were together for Sonny Breeze's win, and
yep.
He paid $1,260. This was in the concern. This was 7-ace. This is a 3-year-old, and
yes.
what's the upside on this horse, Ned?
Well, he won his first start very impressively. He won his second start very nicely, and he deserved a shot at a stake. And I thought that race came up good for him. I thought the Amsterdam at Saratoga might have been a little bit too much to try because he's still a little green. He's just learning how to run. So I wanted to try to keep him in a perfect mode and get him there slowly as opposed to just rushing into real good horses.
Well, not only has he, you know, won all three starts, but he's also stretched out with aplomb from 5.5 with the maiden win when he won by 7, and then 6. These are both at Delaware, and he was no surprise that day at 3-5, but stretched out to 6 and now to 7. So he's proving tractable.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, the Cajun Breezes are kind of, you know, he throws a sprinter-type horse, but they said Mom's Command didn't have the pedigree to run over a mile. And the mother, the American Coaching Club, was a mile and a half. So, I mean, you know, some horses just outrun their pedigree.
Hey, Ned, when it comes to that, how much of it is confirmation and how much of it is, you know, is training of... How much of it is makeup, you know, a horse able to stretch what is perceived as speed?
That's a good question. I wish I had a definitive answer for you, but I do know one thing. Those good horses will do things you don't think they're supposed to do. And, you know, probably the trick to having a good horse is to keep them happy, keep them fit, and have them in the right company at the right time. And, you know, and miracles happen when that all comes together.
Well, and, you know, when you talk about company and placing horses, that ties into probably one of the equations that is been a challenge for the game, and that is managing owner expectation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't blame owners for getting excited, but when they get excited too early and you're forced into running in spots you don't, as a trainer, feel that you're really ready for. You know, if you're a good boxer, you don't jump in with Muhammad Ali in your first start. You know, you gotta build up to that, and you need confidence. And the only way to give a horse confidence is let him win some races.
And it makes a difference, right? I mean, we do see what we frequently refer to as refuseniks. You know, horses
right.
that might come with a run and then refuse to pass, essentially,
right,
an idle, because
right.
they're not they're herd animals and they don't sometimes mentally they don't feel that they're supposed to be on the point.
Right.
Yeah. Then there's also horses that.
I really think there's something to that.
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, there's also horses that are inadvertently turned into punching bags in the mornings that end up working
right.
with horses they can't outrun.
Right, right.
So there's all kinds of things. You know,
yes, there are. And you have to weigh them all out, and you have to be able to keep your owners happy too, because you know. Sometimes their visions of grandeur just can't be met at that time. But, you know, you give a horse a shot and it might happen.
Well, exactly. And
because, I started in New England in 1970. And I know one year there I won 28 stakes. In fact, the only one that won more mistakes than I did that year was Woody Stevens. But, you know, I realized starting him off in New England was never an issue from stopping them to be good horses. You know, it built up their confidence, and it carried through to other racetracks. And I kind of learned that lesson a long time ago, to start off a little conservatively and give the horses a chance to build up their confidence.
No doubt. I now you got me curious, too. I want to ask, in addition, obviously, to Suffolk, Rockingham, Narragansett, Lincoln, what tracks in New England? Where else did you win?
Other than in New England, I never ran. I don't think I only ran one horse at the fair, and never. But all my wins in New England were from Lincoln Downs to Narragansett, Suffolk, Rockingham, a few at Green Mountain. I ran all over the place in New England.
I we love Green Mountain. I only got to see the Greyhounds at Green Mountain. I didn't see Thoroughbreds. I got a fun story. You know, I grew up in Manchester, Connecticut, and this had to be around 1970, probably 69. Who knows? I came home from school, and my grandfather's Bonneville is in the driveway up from Great Neck from Long Island.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was unannounced. It was crazy
that
he would show up. He was there for two reasons. He was sort of taking a break from my grandmother, from Ida, and he wanted to go to Rhode Island. He wanted to go to Gansett.
Right.
To see a race and right. To bet a race. And I did not go. My father went with him to Narragansett. I didn't get to go.
But What year was that?
I must have been 10, so it's got to be 69 or 70.
Right.
In that range. 70, somewhere, you know, between, I'd say, 69 and 71. 10, 11, 12 years old, yeah.
Wow.
I love it.
I was there.
Exactly. You absolutely were there. And there's so many, you know, there's so many great New England based guys that, you know, I talk to Mike Arrow all the time and,
right.
One of the great characters.
It's amazing the amount of people that came out of New England that have done very well. And, you know, even a guy like, he had Petit Rouge at Narragansett, and he went to New York, and he became a prominent trainer in New York. His name, Woody Sedlak.
Oh, sure.
And that's one of the first guys I knew that left New England to go to New York and just did extremely well.
Well, Ned,
I started with George Handy in 1957, so that's
unbelievable.
I can go back a ways.
What got you on the racetrack?
Excuse me?
What got you on the racetrack? Was there?
Well, my father was from Lowell, Massachusetts, and he loved Vesper Country Club, and was a member there. And when he made his fortune in music. He bought a summer home on Cobbett's Pond, which, as far as I know, Gil Campbell's father built, which is pretty amazing. But anyway, George Handy had a cottage right next to ours, and I was helping him get some skis out of his trunk one day because he was dropping them. And, you know, I asked him what the horse was doing on the front of his car. He said, you'd have to get up at 5 a.m. to find that out. And what possessed me to go sit on his doorstep the next day as a 10-year-old, I can't remember. But I was there, and he took me to the track, and it was love at first sight.
Unbelievable.
Yep. Unbelievable. So this is my 68th year on the racetrack.
So incredible, Ned. So you were on hand when Bill Veeck bought the track.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
six tons a day, right? His book.
Yep.
For those that have not read, I went that closing weekend, and boy, that Saturday.
I was there too. I was there. I was closing day.
That was a mess on Saturday when the rains came. Jeez.
Right.
That was.
Yeah,
that
I mean, I, you know, I practically cried when Suffolk Downs closed because I thought, you know, if they had ever gotten the slots, they'd have still been going strong.
No, and that was kind
I don't really know how that happened that they didn't get it, but it's a shame because I had a lovely home in Winthrop, Mass, and that's where my roots were, you know.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? You got to go with the times.
Well, you're a testament to, you know, horsemanship and you know, the way in which horsemen adjust to circumstance and, you know, make the most of it. And, you know, you've been successful at a high level for decades. And I whenever you win, I always laud you on the air.
Thank you.
It's so easy, you know, so easy to root for you and you know, the work you do. So
right.
Delighted.
Well, thank you.
Well, you're not done either.
No, hell no, I'm not done.
What? Give us you don't have any entries coming up this week, but what about a good 2-year old? What 2-year old are you excited about?
Well, my 2-year olds aren't ready. I've got a few 2-year olds. I've only run one so far, or two so far. 2-year old wise, I don't think you're going to see anything exciting from me until later on this fall. But I still have some more 3-year olds that are going to be making their debuts, and so I'm hoping to continue on and win some races.
Well, and you know, if you got a 3-year old in July, now, you know, August in a couple of days, you know, obviously, you know, taking your time and maybe an issue or two, but that's one of the hallmarks, you know, of a career is. You know, no need. You got a lot, not a luxury per se, but you do have the advantage of training for people that will just trust your judgment.
Yeah, they trust my judgment, and they're knowledgeable themselves. So I mean, you don't have all those silly conversations about what's going on. They understand the game, and it makes it a lot easier on the trainer too.
Well, I'm always excited when I get a chance to call you. Ned Allard, congratulations on the stakes wins and continued success. When are we going to see Begin next?
Well, probably in September.
Okay. Gave her a little.
Yep, little gave fresh. Her a little break.
All right. And she was giving evidence of needing a little break.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, I don't know. I think the tremendous heat that we had for a couple of weeks knocked out a couple of my good horses, and I put them on I sent them to a Normar farm in Maryland, and they have a water treadmill and a Eurosizer. They stay fit and they get a break.
Nice.
And you know, occasionally you have to stop on some horses and give them a break. Even the good ones, you have to do that too.
Well, she's outpaced her mother, Shanani Song, in terms of her career accomplishments, and I imagine.
Yeah, and I trained her too.
That's right, there's no rush. Mr. Matz is happy to keep her going. Into next year.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why not. Charlie just turned 98, but he still has plenty of enthusiasm.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he turned 98 yesterday. And, you know, my old boss, George Handy, turned 101 on July 13th.
Wow.
And I still stay in touch with him on a monthly basis. And it's pretty amazing.
Well, and George, I mean, we talked to him now. It's a few years ago, right at the end of his career, he had that nice. Yeah, that one horse that that got good.
Yeah. I mean, George George won a lot of races. He was a good horseman. He was a good mentor for me. He was like my stepfather. Just a great guy, and we still stay in touch, and that's pretty amazing. Because some of his assistants and people that came up under him, they're all gone. And George Handy and I are still here.
Unbelievable. I mean, yeah. And 2018 was his last starter.
Excuse me?
2018 was the last starter. It's only, you know, yeah. It's only 6-7 years ago.
That's right. That's right.
Amazing.
He's an amazing guy.
For sure. And, you know, it's funny. Statistically, I just pulled it up. They say 1,364 races, but God knows, you know, how many other wins aren't included in that total.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's many because back then, like, that, I don't even think they've got my record for the first 2 years I trained because they weren't doing that at the time.
No. Well, and in fact, I'm just looking at Equibase. They are including back to 1964. So anything George won before 64.
Well, then it's an accurate figure. I think I'm not too far away from 2,800.
I think 2745.
Something like that.
Yeah, in that range.
Yeah.
Here, hold on. I had it up on the screen a minute ago. They're 2798, so 2 wins away from 2800.
There you go.
All right. Well, you got to hang around for 3,000.
We'll get there. Okay, I think.
press forward. We want to get you on for win 3,000.
There you go. I'm all for that.
Ned, always a pleasure and a privilege. Thank you.
Well, you're quite welcome.
Ned Allard, and absolutely one of the great horsemen around the game for decades. Incredible. That's pretty funny. I'm just thinking about other names. That description of you have to get up at 5 a.m. to find out, you know, what the horse on the car means. T.J. Kelly, Tom Kelly, he told the story about, you know, growing up near Pimlico and climbing the fence because he wanted to know, as a kid, wanted to know what's going on, you know, inside those walls. And, of course, that begets the famous racetracker line that, you know, they don't put the fence up to keep people out. They put them up to keep us in. That's great. Ned Allard. Got a little Mom's Command in. Peter Fuller, great man. Tim Yakteen. We're going to get Tim Yakteen in here next. And what do we got? We got Yakteen. We got Dale Romans to follow. After Yakteen, and I told you it was going to be a horseman bonanza. The Mark Glatt as well. So we'll get Yakteen and Romans. We'll take a break, and then Glatt, Andy Serling, Todd Pletcher in the second half. All right. So let's reach for Brian. Pull up Yakteen, and actually, well. While he does that, I will pull out the charts from Johans. I think I won't be making the mistake of of doubting Johans anytime soon again. That was impressive. And then there was the maiden win. McKinsey Street. So McKinsey, with his first two winners back-to-back, there was Saturday, Chad with that Chancer that was awfully impressive, Chancer McPatrick, and now Tim Yakteen with McKinsey Street as well. That was early on the card on Saturday, and I think I hear Tim with us now. Tim, good morning.
I am on. Good morning.
it's good to talk to you. And I foolishly tried to beat Johannes on Saturday. Congratulations on the Eddie Reed win.
Right. Well, we need people like you. Keep the price up, right?
Why you got to be like that?
But I could see, you know, unproven at 9 furlongs. You don't know if you can get the 9. You know, obviously he was doing very well going into the race, but even as a trainer, you know, an unknown is an unknown. So until you can validate yourself against that quality of a field going 9 furlongs, you don't know.
Well, you also had to deal with being, you know, outposted, being posted wide.
Yeah, but I looked at that. Basically, it looked like the field might have enough speed to where we can get ourselves into a good position. The way it materialized, it ended up materializing the way it looked on form. You know, Balladeer was going to go. And there should have been some separation there. And we were able to sort of tuck in coming out on that dog leg going into, you know, coming out of the chute there. So it worked out well. But you're right. With drawing the 9 hole, sometimes, you know, you might have had a rider or two going, you know, there's only one speed horse in here. And we can put ourselves in a position and keep Johannes parked. You know, so.
Umberto Rispoli aboard, and he really did do a masterful job down, you know, coming down the chute and meeting, you know, the main course, because he ended up in the 2-path.
Exactly.
Well, basically stalks Balladeer, takes over, and he was so confidently handled too, Tim. I mean, it really, he looked like a winner basically every step.
Right. Yeah. Well, the pace had slowed down. Obviously, when you're going 1.8 miles, you know, previously we had campaigned at miles. And so the pace is a little bit more rapid. I mean, if you look back at his American or the Shoemaker mile, the pace was substantially hotter on the front end. So that just gave us the opportunity to settle into a more comfortable stride, and he was just there for him the whole time. You know, he maybe got a little aggressive that first quarter, but subsequently he was right there for him.
Well, one thing that I am just noticing that I didn't really mention or note going into the race, he was the only 4-year-old in the field. Everybody else was 5 and 6.
And we had to carry top weight. How was that?
That's it. Along with DeJure. That's true. You're right. You both carried 125, and everybody else was 121 or 123.
Right.
Well, don't get all Bobby Frankel on us with the. that is the most weight he's carried, though.
That it is. That it is, yeah.
What, Tim? You've been around long enough to watch the significance of weight dissipate to some extent in this country. Do you ever worry about about weight assignments?
You know, not as much, but I am a big weight man. You know, weight does mean a lot to me, and you know, I want my riders to do the weight assignment, and if I can take a weight break, you know, I don't mind going in and getting the weight break as well. So, you know, if the race lends itself, or if I can get in at a lower price and take a couple pounds, I'll take the couple pounds. If I feel we have a bug out here that's doing well, I don't mind riding the bug, because I really feel weight makes a big difference.
Well, you also have got an interesting, it's not an issue by any stretch, but this was his first try at 1.8 miles. It's the longest distance he's gone. He has run 1 mile or less, you know, most often. And everything is going to swing around and come back to Del Mar for Breeders' Cup, in fact, for the next 2 years. So it's got to be nice to get a win over that course for him, knowing that, you know, you got two Breeders' Cups the next 2 years over the racetrack. What do you think, you know, long-term and actually short-term, your distance thoughts? Are you going to keep stretching him out, or are you going to, is this as far as you want to go? Are you going to shoot for a Breeders' Cup Mile try? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the Breeders' Cup Mile on the turf is generally the most competitive race on the card, you know, and it can be a fairly rough run race at times as well, especially on a tighter course. But the bottom line is that I think we will target the mile this year. He's proven himself at a mile. And that'll be the direction we go ahead and continue to campaign this year. You know, providing he's healthy next year, I think might be the time where we can maybe deviate and see if that's a scenario that we want to entertain. But right now, we know he's done well at a mile, and we'll continue to go that route.
Well, and he was, you know, he was quick enough to win, break his maiden at six, and is now 6-for-10. Johans, this is the Nyquist colt, the Kiathi people who we've talked about, and of course the mare. You got clearly one of the country's top types in here. Johans, even money, little under 6-5, and how much would one start or how much does he thrive on the work?
You know, our plan is to give him one more start. Yeah. So it's just a matter of how much time between races. He's come out of his touch of wood. He's come out of his race in excellent shape. And you know, ideally, as many clients like to take advantage of the win you're in, the Del Mar Mile doesn't offer that option. The City of Hope does offer that option. Santa Anita does have a new turf course in again. We'll be running on a fresh course, and we'll probably lean towards the City of Hope and giving us 5 weeks to the Breeders' Cup.
Perfect.
So,
perfect.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, Johans with a very nice performance, 102 buyer, and he was sharp coming in, too. Boy, he two near bullets. How about that? Second best of 91. Before coming downstate, and then second best of 111 at Del Mar. It's interesting how well he works over the dirt.
Yeah, and that's why we had originally campaigned him on the main track, and that's how we ended up on the turf. He wasn't replicating his morning workouts in the afternoon. I had expected more from him in the afternoon. Granted, you know, he had run into a decent field his first time back off the layoff. But then he came back in November down at Del Mar, and I was expecting to see a nice forward move. And we didn't see that. So obviously we regrouped and went to the turf, and I think he just flattered himself that day. It was a big, you know, one by drawing off. And subsequently, you know, we've never looked back and are staying to a course that he prefers. He is a good workhorse in the morning. Obviously, we try and limit and slow him down in the morning because he wants to do a little more than we probably would like him to do. But in that same statement, it also, he's a type of horse that will keep himself fit. So spreading his races apart and just giving him that time to bounce back is a little bit easier on us.
Well, gotta before I talk to you about McKinsey Street's win and you know where you go from there, I actually have to, you know, because of who we're talking about, I actually have to refer to Thursday and the first race, because it doesn't, you know, you may not get in with C Runner, but tell us about the half brother. This is the Gun Runner filly, or half sister, the Gun Runner filly, C Runner, that is waiting for a debut.
Right. So, you know, she's been training very well. She's super fit and really excited to see her run. She's been doing well. She looks very, very similar to Johannes, but my wife would say different. She's in really good form. So hoping we draw in. And if we don't, then hopefully we can get the mile race to go and get a start into her. But we are excited to see her. She is doing well, and hopefully, you know, we can be half as good as Johannes, and we'll have some fun with her.
Nice. This for those who want to write the name down or pull up the Del Mar PPs from Thursday, C Runner is the 10, 6-1. If the race goes, Umberto Rispoli will ride. And, of course, he's already tied on with Johannes. Now, if even if she doesn't run, you're in the body with My Perfect Wave. This is an American Pharaoh and Southern California Equine Stables. What do we need to know about this debuter?
Well, she's a nice big scopy filly. I feel that she'll probably benefit with a race underneath her. She's a filly that gives me the impression that we're going to see her really excel when she goes around two turns, but this will be a good starting point. Beautiful mover, very happy with her. And Tommy Atkinson runs Southern Equine Stables, a small syndicate. They have a few horses with me, and they're great to train for, very patient, and would really like to see My Perfect Wave excel once we stretch her out a little bit.
Well, and you can, it's not like you can't win with a firster. You can, but this based on pedigree, this one does feel like five furlongs might be a little
correct.
Sharp. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you're obviously, Tim, off to a fabulous start. Tim Yakteen with us. We talked about Johannes's Eddie Reed win and from Sunday. It was the Beat Bick race, and Tim beat me. But you're off to this terrific start. And McKinsey Street's win, second McKinsey to break through. But earlier in the meet, Proud Starlet, Broker Maiden, was that Friday or Saturday? And you got four wins already, Tim.
Right. Yeah. So it's nice to start off the meet, you know, on a good note. Obviously, I've had my challenges, because I think there were a couple more races that I could have won had it been a little luckier. But we're very proud of Proud Starlet. I actually, it was coincidental. Mike Aker bought Proud Starlet for Trevor Smith. They didn't realize that I had trained Proud Heroine for George Kerkorian, the filly's bred by George. And obviously George is very excited to have seen the results. He sold her back in September, and she was subsequently pin-hooked. But I actually had IRAD Broker Maiden down the hill for me several years ago. So it was nice to have one of her daughters end up in my in my stable, and was pretty excited at getting her in, and then we drew the one hole, and that sort of deflated my balloon. Yeah, and, you know, Castleloo was in there. Excuse me, it wasn't Castleloo, it was Usha. Castleloo.
That Usha. Of Baffert and yeah. Pegram Watson Whiteman.
Yeah, and she had been training exceptionally well. She had a draw on the outside, so her hand was sort of dealt when you break out of the one hole. But fortunately, Proud Starlet had the speed to go ahead and get herself in a good position from the beginning, and it all worked out for us.
And under Antonio Frasu and one off, and she had shown actually, she had shown early speed in those gate works. It looked like she had a good first jump.
Right. Yeah. No. She had touted herself, but as a trainer, you know, you draw back on your experiences coming out of the inside with your young horses. You know, if they break a step slow and they fold over on them, you know, it's a completely different story. So when you can get an outside draw, you're granted, you know, a mistake or two at times, you can overcome those, because your race isn't forced, but, when you're down on the inside, your hand is dealt to you if you don't get away from there running.
Well, Proud Starlet, Mendelssohn filly, as you mentioned, George Krikorian, and this one was a $220,000 OBS purchase in April. You also sent out for the Amistoys, Native Charmer, a Practical Joke filly, and feels like she got a decent education.
And she did. You know, she's a big filly. I don't know if you saw the race live, but, you know, she towered in height. She's a big scopey filly. That's why we opted for the 5.5. Probably in hindsight, we should have waited even for the 6 furlong race. So she just wants more distance. She got a good education in that race and came back in great shape. So I'm hoping to see her capitalize with a race underneath her, and the further she goes, the better she should be.
We'll watch for that one to come back. And I got to ask you, you mentioned that you thought you might have been able to have won another race or two. Certainly Sabretooth, with another jump or two, gets past Fincher and show of force.
Right. Yeah, he ran a big race. So Sabretooth was a yearling that we bought back in April with George Sharp. Comes from a strong family. His sister's, her earnings are close to $1 million. He's actually a Maryland bred, but California sired. So we have two programs that are good programs that we can take advantage of. But I ended up in an open race. Because I wanted to get him on the grass right off the back. So probably see if we can get him into the cowbred route race on the grass in the next book and see if that gives us enough time to still come back in the at the end of the meet if we're good enough in the Del Mar Juvenile Turf.
Tim, and you bring up an interesting element when you refer to a cow race. So that the program leaves it open to either cow bred, meaning those that dropped in California, or cow sired.
Correct, and he's by Grazen. Grazen's been a very prolific sire in the state of California.
Terrific.
Nick Alexander.
Can't say no.
Tim, Mike Mitchell campaigned him. He was a very gifted horse, and I'm very happy for Nick that he's done so well.
Nick, one of the really important owners and breeders on the West Coast, no doubt. Well, Tim, you're killing it. Let's round out the conversation. And of course, actually, Nick, didn't he win the, yeah, he did. He won the Daisy Cutter with that Connie Swingle.
Connie Swingle, off of a 2-year layoff.
Unbelievable.
And, that's a pretty impressive effort. You know, Phil obviously had her ready. She paid a nice price. I think she went off at 9-2 and put a big smile on Nick's face.
Well, tell me about McKinsey Street. And when entered, McKinsey didn't have a winner yet. But by the time they ran this race, we had had one at Saratoga on Saturday who was quite impressive running down a loose leader. Tell me about this one, the Amistoys.
So, you know, I was very excited when Pierre and Leslie were able to get a McKinsey. I tried to chase a few. Unfortunately, they were selling really well. And Julie Davis had consigned this colt down in April, and he had previewed well. And he's been a very, very straightforward horse. Great mind. And with him, we did draw a good post. So, but again, you know, I'm taking on the giant, Bobby, and he had a Nyquist colt in there that had been raising exceptionally well. And, you know, I didn't know if I was going to be good enough first time out to take him on. I did know my horse was fast. That first jump, he always takes a stride to get into it, and KK was aware of that and knew that, you know, once he got that second jump, that he was going to be underneath him and be able to show the speed that he demonstrates in the morning. And that's sort of how the race unfolded. You know, KK just took it to Juan, and then, you know, the race was on from there.
81 Buyer, winning by 3 and change, kind of earmarking him, you know, an early leader among the 2-year-olds out there. You look toward the end of the meet, Futurity?
And we're looking toward the end of the meet. I think Getaway Car is going to be looking for McKinsey Street.
I like it. Listen to you. McKinsey Street, and a fabulous start for the Yak Team. In fact, I'm talking, lined up today, going to talk to Glatt later in the hour, and he's off to a tremendous start as well. And Eric Kruljack's going to join us. We'll talk about Calbred, the Calbred with something extra, the Chosen Vron. He's what a delight that must be to watch a horse like that as a fan, Tim.
I tell you, he is just so, so special. We get to watch him train in the morning, and I, you know, obviously he's not in our barn or in any of the other trainers' barn. Eric has just done a fantastic job. And we, you know, since we all train at the same track, we get to watch him train, and he's just such a pleasure to watch, and to watch him in the afternoon. I mean, what he did on the weekend just gives you goosebumps. You know, he's a fast horse that, you know, that can just turn it on at any point. And yeah, just the joy. We got 3-2 on him, and that's going to be the biggest price you'll get on him for a long time.
Listen to you. If people have been listening carefully, Tim watching the board for his horses and others. We love that. Good job, Tim. Always a pleasure, and delighted for you. And I can tell we'll talk more as the summer unfolds.
Well, sounds good. But thanks for having me on, Steve.
Always great. Tim Yakteen, everybody. And obviously, you win 4 races in the first 2 weeks at Del Mar. And not just win them, but in nice shape. Big time. Very good. McKinsey Street, 81 Buyer. Speaking of maiden winners and horsemen that make sires, Dale Romans is standing by. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. It's always good to be on the show because you know you did something right.
Well, you did everything right, and Tony Kahlo did did our listeners right by pushing you yesterday. That was awfully nice. The one part of that win yesterday that I suppose, you know, somebody might say could have gone better is if you and Bob Barron were here at Saratoga with that winner.
Yeah, that would have been fun. But, you know, it's hard to leave Kentucky with baby. You know, I've never left Kentucky with my babies anyway, but Kentucky's going so strong, it's hard to get out of here.
Nah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I mean, talk about the pleasure, of this is a homebred for Barron. And obviously, you know, promises fulfilled, you know, his career just getting going. You always love to tout your stallion prospects. You said way back when Not This Time's career was cut short on the racetrack, you said to everybody that would listen he was going to be a top stallion, and look what's happened.
It's worked out pretty well. He's about as good as there is out there. You know, I like to tout him, but they're backing me up with Kitten's Joy and Not This Time and now Promises. I'm telling you, everybody knows how great Not This Time is, and he's just going to get better. The better mares are just starting to run this year, and you're going to see more great things out of him. And those horses don't lie to you. When they show you can run, they can really run. But Promises had a very small crop his first year and has had limited mares. But I know I've talked to Kenny McPeak, says he has a good one. Mark Cassie says he has a good one. I've got six myself. They all look like they can run. He might be a sleeper out there for somebody looking for a low-priced stallion.
How many, and you still have mares, right? You must have a few. Did you breed some of your own?
I got a couple of mares, and I've bred I can't breed them Not This Time anymore. I've got to sell that one every year. But, I took some to Promises this year, and Bob, of course, backed him real hard. And Tis Cecile, the mother of Quinn's Promise, is one of Bob's, and it's fun to watch him. You know, I started going over to Windstar and looking at this filly when she was a weanling and watched her grow up, and she showed promise from the day she was born. And to go on and see her win like that yesterday was very rewarding.
Well, it was rewarding for our listeners who bet along with and paid a big number.
Yeah, she made a lot of people happy. I haven't heard Bob that excited in a long time, by the way.
Did he come out? Did he come out to Henderson?
He didn't come to Ellis. I did, of course. I was here. I'm actually at Muhammad Ali Airport right now, getting ready to go back to Saratoga. I came in to watch these two run and check on some things, and glad I did.
Well, solid figure, mid-60s. What do you do? Where do you go next out of that?
Well, I guess we'll probably run Stake at Churchill. You know, you don't have a whole lot of options with two-year-olds after they break their maidens. But this time of year, anyway, by the fall, you get some allowance races to go. But we'll. I think she's a good filly and may be able to step up.
Really nice. And this was, you know, we should mention, this was a mile, and you've got that same, at Ellis has got that same unusual configuration that we now have with the Wilson course. So a horse has got to be a little versatile and has got to have, some agility, too, to win a mile at Ellis.
You do. And, it's a different race for them. Of course, all the two-year-olds, their first time going a mile, but I like the way she broke. You know, last time she didn't break very well, but she came running. She showed she could take some dirt and finish. And then when she broke so sharp, I really didn't know she would be up on a lead. But she broke sharp and just kept right on going on a sloppy racetrack.
Well, and what's interesting is she's now caught a wet track both of her starts. So we don't even know how good she might be on a dry, fast surface.
She's trained good on the dry. You know, it was a little concerning the first time out when it came up sloppy, but she handled it, so I figured she would handle it yesterday. But it was very sloppy.
Well, Quinn's Promise breaks the maiden second time out, almost 22-1. Tony Kahlo delivering for everybody, and Dale delivering for Bob Barron. And then a half an hour later, you pop with a Not This Time, as mentioned. This is Massaro, but a first-time starter. And this one, people knew a little bit about and went off a little over 5-1.
He's a half-million-dollar yearling, and he shows some good works in the mornings. But for me to win with a first-time starter, they're usually pretty special.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did a lot of things wrong that could make the horse get beat and still run a nice race. He broke a step slow, then he got shut off first jump out of there and ran at the eighth pole. He said the horse jumped out in front of him, stopped all his momentum, but he just came rolling home. This is a special horse. Again, Not This Time. When they show you they can run, they take it to the races.
Hey, this is C.J. Thoroughbreds, and I do see that that Delia Nash, who bred the exchange rate mare, Lemon Liqueur, she bought back in?
She stayed in when they purchased her as a yearling, and she came down. She was the only representation we had for ownership down there yesterday. She came to watch him run. It was very exciting. I mean, that has to be rewarding for her to do the mating and the cross and read the mare and fold the foal and then stay in for a piece and watch it win first time out, especially the way he did it.
Well, how aggressive do you get with him?
I haven't talked to him yet, but, you know, again, there's not many places you can go with those types of horses. It's probably up to me right now. I'd run in the Iroquois at Churchill in September, and that's a good race. His daddy won it, and it's a win and you're in. Two turns, which I think he's going to improve when he stretches out. He's a big, strong colt, and, you know, he finished strong yesterday, galloped out strong, and then Corey couldn't pull him up coming back to the winner's circle. It acted like he'd never done anything.
How about that? This was six furlongs. You know, the best part of if you were to take him to the Iroquois and win, I've presented the trophy for the Iroquois 2 years in a row. So maybe I get a picture with you.
Yeah, that would be good. Iroquois has been good to me. I think we won it four times and like to win it again.
Look at you. Well, Dale, a pretty cool day to win with these two maidens, and these are deep fields. These are $71,000 purses, and, you know, we had actually talked to Rudy Brissett earlier yesterday, and he really liked that True Violence in the seventh, as it happens, that Massaro overhauled.
You know, though you were strong races, both of them, I stood in the paddock for them both and watched every horse walk out, and there wasn't one horse, if you were just looking at them physically, you draw a line through when they left the paddock, and that's unusual any place. But Ellis is up their game, and Kentucky's become the mecca for two-year-old racing. If you can win in Kentucky, you can win anywhere.
Well, and of course, you mentioned coming back to Saratoga, and I have not seen you yet, but I was in and out. I was in Jersey, and we'll see you live as well. You also won with Pharaoh's Wine. That was on Friday, using Martin Schwann, of course. You got a good reason to support Schwann and his agent.
Yeah, Schwann's a good rider, and he's going to catch on because people can't just keep watching him ride these good races and not start riding him. He's, of course, the king of South America. We brought him up last year, and he's just a steady, good hand on a horse and a good person. Of course, my son's his agent, but the reason my son's his agent is because I like the way he rode, and Ramon Dominguez and Edgar Prado both called me and said, there's a kid in South America that needs to be here. You need to get hooked into him. And they were right. People need to just go back and watch the way he rides. They just run for him.
I love it. Dale, we should also touch on what lies ahead. And, you know, anybody that became a fan of Coppola along the way through the winter and into the spring, you knew that he was going to win some important turf sprints. And this has been a fun horse for you. I'm going to run in the Kentucky Downs preview.
Yeah, they can't be much more fun than him. I mean, Tammy gets on him every day. She absolutely loves that horse. She's missing him while she's at Saratoga. But he just does everything. You put him in the right spot, point in the right direction, and he'll give you a good race. Those types of horses are fun to be around. I think we've won six or seven races with him since we've had him. And that's a lot of races to win with a horse like him.
Well,
he got
unlucky and
hooked Cogburn a couple of times. But outside of hooking Cogburn, he's run pretty darn good.
Well, exactly. Just coming off the Garrett win at Indy, and you're trying to angle your way toward the race at Kentucky Downs, which I think is now worth $7 million.
It's worth a whole lot of money, and we'll be there. I mean, we're, yeah, it'll be the best of the best in the sprint division on the turf. But hopefully we run big at Ellis and take one step at a time and go try them again.
I love it. It's going to be a fun weekend at Ellis with the 2 days of Kentucky Downs preview stakes. You've also got some maidens we should ask about while we're together, and that includes Saratoga, because CK Wonder, who we're looking forward to on the Whitney undercard.
I really like this horse. He's a beautiful colt, and my friend Barry Berkelheimer broke him in Ocala. And when I was at the sale, wasn't getting enough action on him. I guess people weren't sure about Vekoma, but I think they're all sure about Vekoma now. And we got him for a pretty reasonable price, and I expect him to run big.
This is for Mark Stanley too. Nice to see Mark. How many has he got these days?
That's the only one I have for him right now, but I've had him off and on over the years. Some really good horses, and that's a. And I'm glad to have another good one from Mark. I was at the sale, and I really didn't have anybody buying. We were done, and I really liked this colt, so I just called Mark out of the blue. I said, Mark, there's a colt here I think we should buy. He had gotten bought back, and Mark never hesitated. He said, go get him.
How about that? $130,000 you paid.
Yes, yeah, a reasonable price. And like I say, if he'd have sold at Timonium sale after Vekoma started doing what he was doing, he'd have brought two or three times that.
Well, he's had a couple of works at Saratoga, so we'll look forward to Mike Welsh and his comments. We're talking about the CK Wonder Vekoma colt on this terrific, obviously terrific undercard. Let me see. There's another maiden I saw. Where was it? Oh, back Saturday at Ellis, Derry Girl in the third Saturday, Sunday.
Another nice little filly. She's had a couple of starts. She ran okay. Got beat by Vekoma at Churchill. Just couldn't sprint. But Martine gave her a great ride next time out at Ellis. Ran second on the turf. And coming right back in the same spot, she should be one of the favorites and run like it.
Nice. This is an Honor AP filly out of a Medaglia d'Oro mare. Sea Warrior Stables. Who is this?
Actually, Tom Murphy was a kid that was at UofL. Equine program, and came to work for me. His father owned horses in West Point, and they put together Sea Warrior Stable, and we bought a few horses, and I think we got him a good one in this filly.
Very nice. And then finally, tell me about the gray Blame colt, which is interesting in itself that Shogun is a gray. Second start, got solid third in the Ellis debut, bred by Mrs. Alexander, and this is CJ Stables as opposed to CJ Thoroughbreds.
That causes a little confusion, but yeah, two different groups. But you know, this is a nice colt, and if you go back and watch this race, he looked like he was the winner, and he started laying in on the horse next to him, just running green, and got beat. But got a lot of grass in his pedigree, but he's on also eligible, so I don't think we'll get to run him. But everybody should keep an eye on him for next time.
Well, as it happens, this is a colt that comes out of a Janney family mare line. This horse has some talent.
Yeah, he does. He's got some credentials to back up his talent he's shown, and keep an eye on him.
Well, and not only there's the Janney mare, there's also Betty Moran, Megan's Joy in here, the AP Indy mare, bred by the Morans, Brushwood.
All good people, good breeders, and good families. So can't go wrong with good families. And yeah, he came out of the same OBS sale, CK Wonder. So that sale looked like it was pretty good to us.
Well, Dale, you make the sales good by getting these horses going. You seem, you seem really well poised for the rest of the second half of the year.
You know, any problems you have, a fast horse will make go away. So we're in good shape right now. No problems. This flight back to Saratoga is going to be nice and easy. I wasn't dreading it at all today.
Well, always love a good reason to pick up. There's any reason to pick up the phone and call you, but we got to get you on TV with Seth and I as well. We'll see you this week. Dale Romans, well done.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you later.
Safe travels. Dale Romans, everybody. Let's take the break here. We're past the bottom of the hour. I told you it was going to be a horseman festival. Ned Allard, Tim Yakteen, Dale Romans starting us off this first 100 minutes. Mark Glatt is going to join us next. And then some Andy Serling, some Eric Kruljack, and some Todd Pletcher. Tuesday at the races. Sirius XM back after this.